What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Point Nine podcast. Point Nine, not just representing the amount of time that it took for Damian Lillard to end the hopes of the Houston Rockets. It's also the career three-point percentage of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Get wrecked.
With that 120-degree obtuse angle jump shot of his. I can discuss that. I'm your host. I'm Owen, known as the Stat Man, Mr. Analytic. I've got all the stats on deck, and I'm joined by my best friends, Brady, the passionate one. Brady, what's going on, man?
Man, what is good? I'm chilling. A 120 degree obtuse angle jumper. He's got Canelo meets like the old dude at the gym.
Yeah, it's gross. He's got old man gym vibes.
He's got the weather, dude.
and as usual, of course. We got Thomas Burleson, the storyteller, the nostalgic one. Thomas, how you doing, baby?
Oh, I'm living the dream. I'm ready to roll, dude. I'm excited for this episode for Sherzies.
Dope. All right, I got a stat real quick before we move any further.
Oh, please.
Do you guys know who Hubert Davis is by any chance?
Yeah, isn't that the guy who made the brownies?
What?
I don't know. I just said I'm passionate. Well, passionate one, so I just say
if you said no, that answer is correct because hardly anybody knows who this guy is. But he's currently, right now, as it stands, he has the second highest 3-point percentage in NBA history.
What?
Yeah, 44.1%. Right behind Steve Kerr. Isn't that crazy?
Right behind Steve Kerr, huh?
Yeah.
Who does he play for?
What did you mean?
Who did he play for?
He played for Charlotte.
The Bobcats?
No, he played for. Oh no, I'm thinking of. My bad. I'm thinking of where he. I know he went to North Carolina. He played for the Knicks. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
Who's number three?
That's a great question. I don't know. Probably Steph. I think.
That's absolutely.
I think he's at like 43.6.
Incorrect. It's Ime Udoka. No, I'm just kidding.
Real quick, before we go any further, I just want to give a huge shout out to everyone who's shown support to the podcast. It's meant so much to us, and we've received so much love. If you guys haven't already, please go ahead and hit the follow on Apple Podcasts as well as on Spotify and Anchor. And feel free to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Point Nine Podcast. We appreciate you guys so much. It's meant a lot to us doing this and just kind of pouring our hearts into it. And the support has been incredible.
For sure.
We got a banger of an episode today. I'm super excited to talk about it. And just before we even started recording, I can speak on behalf of all three of us. I'm really excited to talk about topics like this where we the heart of the game and not just for lack of a better term, kind of like the materialistic aspects of basketball, but to really dive into the emotional aspects of the game. Yeah. And so today we get the opportunity to talk about the most emotional moments. It's going to be awesome. The most emotional moments in basketball. And we're basically what we're going to be doing is kind of dividing it up into three separate categories, the three H's, if you will. Hype, heartwarming, and hard moments. Or heavy is a better term probably for it.
Well, hey, Owen, the heavy one is going to be really simple. That's going to be a quick little segment. All we got to do is reach into any photo the NBA has on file of Raymond Felton in the year 2011-12. We're going to be good.
Oh, my gosh.
Glenn Davis is laughing.
We'll call this episode Triple H, bro.
Yeah.
Play the game.
Shout out to Hunter Hearst Helmsley. The boy. I guess we're just going to kind of start from the top. I would love to just first start with the hype moments. And it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't think I really need to dive into too much. Was super excited preparing this this topic. And so, Brady, I'll go to you first. What's in basketball that – I don't really have another term to say besides made you hype. Like, what was the moment that you got to experience, whether it was live or on national television, that hyped you up?
Man, the most hyped that I've ever been watching any sporting event is actually what really birthed this podcast. I'm talking about game six of the 2014 NBA playoffs between Portland and the Houston Rockets. That game was incredible. Come playoff time, I become one of the most intense fans because literally every play matters. Every turnover, every pass, every shot, it's intensified.
So you become passionate.
So if you've ever been around me during playoff basketball, especially Blazers playoff basketball, I'm that fan usually regular season, preseason, that's yelling at the TV or talking to the players like I'm their coach, which honestly I probably could have done a better job than Mo Cheeks. You know what I mean? That Nate McMillan did, but that's besides the point. I'm always talking to the TV. I'm always talking to the players on first name basis. Is we just kicked it at Applebee's right before the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but game six was such an incredible game, through and through. It's one of the best basketball games I've ever watched. Just to paint you guys a picture, it's 2014. I believe the Blazers were the fifth seed in the playoffs. We are versing the Houston Rockets, who are number four. And game one, LaMarcus Aldridge has arguably the best game of his career. I think he had 41 points and 13 rebounds. And this is back when the Blazers, this was LaMarcus's team. This was LA's team, and LA has the game of his life. Literally poops all over Terrence Jones, all game.
Yeah.
Shout out to Terrence Jones.
And the Blazers steal home court. And then game two, LaMarcus Aldridge literally has an even better game than he did in game one.
Yeah.
And then we win, I believe game two was the game that we won again off of that Wesley Matthews stop at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was hyped. I was so ready. And then I believe we lost game three. I think we won game four and went up 3-1. And then game five, Houston wins. So we go back to game six with an opportunity to close out the series.
At home.
If you are a Blazer fan, you know that we're on the short end of a lot of sticks. A lot of teams have really great moments against us. And so I'm watching this whole game and I'm like, yo, what could literally go wrong? You know what I mean? And the game just is so intense. The game is so intense. And it's back and forth. Fourth quarter comes around, there's 1 minute left, and there's the game has been tied 14 different times. So 1 minute left, about 45 seconds left. Nick Batum takes the ball, and Nick Batum, I love him. He did a great job for us about half the time. Nick Batum takes the ball up at the top of the key, or the top of the court, 3-point line, and he has an ISO with Dwight Howard. He drives to the right side. He kind of does a pump fake. Howard kind of collapses with James Harden. And honestly, James Harden didn't put his hands up, so James Harden played the best defense he could. And Batum pump fakes and then fades back and hits a jumper and ties the game.
That's a sick jumper, by the way.
Yeah. So then.
Yeah, he looked like Michael Kidd Gilchrist out there.
Obtuse.
So then. The Rockets have the ball. They go down the floor. And I believe Harden puts up a jumper. And it's going out of bounds. It hits the rim. I think L.A. taps it to Dame. And Dame catches it. And it's oh, my gosh, we just stopped them with 30 seconds left. And it's a tie game. Portland has the chance to do this. but the ref makes one of the worst calls I've ever seen and says that Damian Lillard wasn't establishing bounds. And I don't remember. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I was so mad.
I don't. That's, yeah. I try to probably block that out, but.
So.
Yeah, I think I repressed that memory.
Literally, yeah. With 28 seconds left, they made this bad call. Portland would have had the ball tied 28 seconds. So Houston gets another chance of it. Harden ISOs the whole time. He takes it up. He dribbles the clock out with Wesley Matthews guarding him, like, incredible defense. And then, you know, drives a little bit, puts up a terrible shot, and goes off the rim. Rolo taps it and taps it a little bit. And with literally 0.9 seconds left, Chandler Parsons gets the rebound and puts it up, puts the Rockets up by two, leaving 0.9 seconds on the clock. And, like, if you watch the replay, Wesley Matthews is just, like, broken. And he's, like, hands are on his head. And it's just, like...
Nobody could believe it.
Yeah, it's, like, heartbreaking. Like, literally, I can't believe that happened. Like, I can't believe they got that, like, garbage rebound. And, like, my thoughts going into that were, like, dude... This has been an incredible series. It's incredibly competitive. And the last thing that I want to do is go in game seven in Houston. Like, we're not going to make it. Like,
no, yeah, let's be honest. Like, if we go to game seven, we're not winning.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're not winning.
I'm not going to say not, but like,
no, we wouldn't.
We've already stolen two in Houston. Yeah. And it just didn't seem like, it seemed like the perfect storm. And it seemed like Houston was going to like pull this out. You know what I mean? And it just was like, I've seen it go wrong so many times.
For sure.
And I'm also a Dallas Cowboy fan. So, like, I'm just, like, used to being upset all the time. True. And true. So, you know, we hear the, you know, there's 9/10 of the seconds left. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. And then, like, that moment, I don't think, like, I screamed louder than I ever have. And I didn't like put together any words or anything. Like it was just like, whoa! You know?
My guy was speaking in tongues.
I literally did a victory screech from the episode of SpongeBob.
This is actually how Brady developed his spiritual language.
Yeah. For sure.
But like the thing was, it was one of those moments where I remember where totally. I was. Like when the towers fell. You know what I mean? Like I remember exactly what I was doing. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I believe they called like Omer Asik and Dwight Howard like Twin Towers and like those fell too. So like, you know what I mean?
not stoked that you made that joke. Anyway,
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Please
like, speed this up. I remember where we were, what I was doing. I was at my stepmom's house, literally watching the game by myself, screaming at the TV with her being like, stop it. Like she didn't understand. It was one of the most emotional. It's the best feeling in sports I've ever felt. I felt so much pride in my team. I literally lost my mind. I called both of you. We both talked about it. We were both screaming. Like,
yes,
it was a feeling that I could never, I can't like remake it, but We did remake that feeling. So
yeah, I think it's truly one of those few moments that I've gotten to witness personally where it felt like time froze.
Yeah,
and it like as soon as the ball goes through the net, I mean, I felt like I was just watching a portrait being painted, and it was like, you know, the crowd was hyped. First time in 14 years we've made it past the first round. Like Damian Lillard's mean mugging. Nicholas Batum can hardly believe what's happened because, I mean, it was a broken play and that play wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And then to top it off, the whole grabbing the mic and like, Rip City!
It was truly iconic. And it really just changed the landscape, especially of that playoff year. And that really elevated, I think, Portland as a team and as a city. And it was
the passing of the torch. Like that, after that shot, that became Damian Lillard's team. Yeah. And also, like, I would never say I regret that shot, but, like, that shot extended Terry Stotts' career with us and Neil O'Shea because, like, I believe we lost to Memphis the year before and, like, in really embarrassing fashion. Yeah. And so I believe, like, if we lose that series, if Damian Lillard doesn't hit that shot, Stotts is gone a lot sooner than he was. I don't believe O'Shea would have had the, like, even more unsuccessful career that he did have.
Like, yeah.
It really, no, like, sure. set no, a trajectory yeah. for us.
Yeah, no, I think sure. I think that really changed the landscape totally of Portland basketball. Thomas, what about you, man?
Well, I mean, there's so many hype moments, not even just in Blazers history, but also obviously throughout all NBA. But of course, my moment is also a Blazer moment. Mm-hmm. And also, shout out to Brady, dude. I thought I was a storyteller. My guy just broke down all Lord of the Rings director's cuts.
That was that was a 4-hour extended cut.
I read the Ultimanium before. But
it was good though. It was
Encyclopedia.
Good. But I want to take you back to May 3rd, 2019. This was the quadruple overtime when my guy Rodney Hood called games.
Bro.
This was the most, like, I don't know if I breathed for, like, a solid 20 minutes. And I remember I actually hadn't watched most of the game until I believe I was doing something with some friends or whatever. We were out, whatever. And I kind of looked at the score, and it was, like 5 minutes left in the fourth. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just tune in. And we were at this restaurant, and it was me and my buddy. And we were just kind of sitting there talking. And I was like, man, I got to figure out how to watch this, like, this game right now. And so I went onto some sketchy sports stream site, and we're watching it. And there was that moment where we're like, oh, man, you know, because we all know this is Blazer fan. And if you're a super fan of a different team, you know this moment where it's like, oh, frick, I don't think they're going to pull this off.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to happen. And then legit, like, we tied it up, and it was like, oh, my gosh. Okay, this is crazy. Overtime, here we go. Then the Nuggets kind of took away, and then it was another moment where you're like, your heart sank. But then just all of a sudden, Rodney Hood was just like, I'm just going to freaking take over. And Rodney Hood just, like, I don't know what happened, but there was some sort of weird, like, voodoo magic on this man, and just kept going at them. And, like, my guy went off. And I just remember, like, being so hyped that he had 19 points off the bench.
Bro.
And, like, he almost had more points than Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless had together in that game. He had
that Mo entire season.
freaking, like, they're freaking. And I just remember I was just, like, going nuts, and I'm screaming, like just losing my mind, because we just kept feeling, oh, my gosh, overtime, another one, oh, my gosh, what is happening, fourth overtime, and then to finally win it was just like, holy crap. And then we went up 2-1 in that series, and obviously ultimately winning that series, it was like insanity.
And I felt like, honestly, I ascended to heaven.
Honestly, that game probably had like CJ's best play of his career too.
Oh, the pass. Totally.
No, the block.
That's right.
Are you talking about game 7, or are you talking about
the... Oh, that was game 7. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, that series did have, like, CJ really shined in that series. Yeah. It was good to see.
Because CJ had 41 points.
That game 7 performance, just to sidetrack from what we were originally talking about, was one of the dopest performances I've ever seen CJ slept on. He's ice cold.
Yeah, he was. Well,
ice water in his veins.
Also, shout out to Enes Kanter. He was 100% behind the 3-point.
I don't know who Enes Kanter is. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I bet.
Sorry, Mr. Freedom.
Oh, Mr. Freedom. Cool.
Yeah. I've got a hype moment too, and like you guys, it's also a Blazer moment. But real quick, I mean, there's so many. I just want to give, like, not necessarily an honorable mention, but, like, we can't talk about hype moments without talking about some of these. Ray Allen's 3-pointer. In game 6.
Yeah.
Nuts. I mean, that's a top 3 clutchest shot ever.
Easy.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I've
what
never
a great been, rebound too.
Yeah, but shout out to Chris Bosh.
Yeah,
with the most insane rebound and most probably the most that might be the most important rebound in NBA history.
I would say so. That or
I'd have to do my research.
That the, I mean, it's up there. Without that rebound, LeBron doesn't have four rings. His legacy changes. That whole yeah.
Or when Vlade Divac jumped up and then hit that rebound back to Robert Horry.
Robert Horry, yeah, that's up there too.
I mean, that was for the wrong team, but yeah. Anyway, keep going, please.
For the wrong team. Steph Curry breaking the three-point record.
Amazing.
Shout out to Steph for having now beaten the first player over 3,000 three-pointers, which crazy. And he did it in Madison Square Garden. Probably the most famous arena in the world.
Yeah, that's iconic in itself.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was originally going into the NBA draft wanting to be drafted by the Knicks and expecting to be drafted by the Knicks.
Last person that wanted that, too.
I think it's just the a really cool parallel that he wanted to be drafted and then wasn't. He was passed up. And then doing something that's never been done, and I honestly don't know if it ever will be done again. In the probably the world's most famous arena.
Totally.
I just think that was incredible. And so I'm going to go ahead and lead it into mine, which, like I said before, is another Blazer moment.
Well, real quick, Owen, sorry to interrupt you, but like you forgot to mention the Thomas Robinson block, bro.
Oh, on what's his name? Corey Brewer.
Corey Brewer, dude.
Thomas hates that guy.
Bro, and then after that, the alley-oop to Will Barton.
Yeah,
that was one of the best sequences in Blazers history.
So hype, bro.
If you haven't seen that, please do yourself a favor. Like, if you're not a Blazer fan, go on this, go and watch this. Like, seriously, truly, truly, this is like one of the best blocks I've ever seen in my entire life.
Also, imagine if he doesn't block it though. That's one of the nastiest posters
ever. Yeah, especially because Corey freaking Brewer,
bro.
Like that play could have taken so many turns. Like imagine if he would have like missed the ball and slapped him. Like Corey Brewer would be dead. flagrant, bro. They would invent a flagrant 3 for that. Like, automatic like death penalty. Like
yeah, for sure.
So I'm gonna go ahead and head into mine real quick. Game 5 against OKC.
Yes, sir.
And I'm able to talk from a little bit of a different perspective than the Houston one, because as important as a moment that is for me. This one probably is a little bit more because I got the opportunity to be there. And so going into this playoff series, I don't think Dame has ever had more pressure or more media coverage going into this playoff series. He's going against Russell Westbrook and Paul George, who at the time Paul George finished that season as an MVP finalist. And Russell Westbrook, obviously being a former MVP winner like that, you know, you're going up against two at that point in time, top 15, top 10 players in the league.
Russ is not a top 10 player anymore.
No.
Top 15.
And then, you know, Dame has CJ and Nurk. And not even Nurk, because he wasn't even playing. He had Enes Kanter. Sorry, Enes Freedom. And
yeah,
you're right, sorry. Brady's really passionate about that.
Have some respect.
Dude's name, okay? Use the right pronouns.
Stupid. Stop. Keep going.
Moving on. Just going into that series, I mean, that was the most hyped playoff series. It's Russell Westbrook versus Damian Lillard, bad blood. Russell Westbrook, up to that point, had Dame's number. He did. He as far as winning games, that season, they swept us in the regular season. They didn't lose a single game. And Russell Westbrook honestly played out of his mind. And so Russell Westbrook, you know, at that point had Dame's number, and Dame had a lot to prove, especially with getting the coverage that he was getting and the pressure and people finally starting to realize that, yo, this guy might be like a top 3-point guard in the league. Let's watch. He had more eyes on him on that playoff series than any other time. And if there's any time that he was going to prove that he was one of the best players in the league, it had to be in that playoff series. He started in game one making a three-pointer from the same exact spot that he ended it. It was a 37-footer And I don't understand. He made 10 shots, 30 plus feet in that entire series. He was having a career high points per game. I think he averaged like 29.1 going into the second round. Like, he was out of his mind. And all of that leading up to game five, we again at home, and being a Blazer fan, you just hope for the love of God that we can close at home.
Yeah.
Because we suck at playing back-to-back after losing at home.
Bro, we suck at playing not at the Moda Center.
And so, like, going into that game, all of the emotions, highs and lows, you know, we're leading. Dame's putting up absolute buckets. He's literally carrying us and keeping us in the game. And then in the fourth quarter, we're down 15 points with 4 minutes remaining. And I'm literally just like, I haven't felt that defeated since, you know, Chandler Parsons got the dumbest offensive rebound I've ever seen. Not felt that defeated in a long time. I'm like, bro, Dame's really putting on a clinic, and the rest of our team is playing like absolute dog water. It was crazy. And then Yusuf Nurkic walks in to the stadium. And for those of you who don't know, earlier that year against Brooklyn, Nurkic ended up breaking his leg.
That was tough. And that was so tough.
That was so tough.
He's never been the same.
No, he hasn't. And so he showed up to the game in the fourth quarter, and they showed him on the Jumbotron. And when I tell you that the stadium, like the arena resurrected, like, it was dead quiet, and they showed him on the screen, and I'd never heard a fan base be so unified so quickly. Like, everyone stood up, everyone got hyped, and all of a sudden it felt like we were winning.
Was it his first time back in the arena since he broke his leg?
Yeah, he hadn't been back in the arena. He'd been doing rehab and surgery, and he hadn't been there, and he wasn't originally even at the game, and he literally drove from his house to the game got there in the fourth quarter. And we just, for whatever reason, came alive. And I was like, bro, Nurk's here. There's like, I don't know how we're going to do it, but there's no way we can lose this game.
It's a perfect recipe.
Mo Harkless had been playing horrible, and he had missed every free throw. He was 0-for-4, I think, at the line.
That's surprising. That's so unlike him.
Dame hits a three right off the bat to trim the lead. Makes a great pass to Mo Harkless. Al-Farouq Aminu, for whatever reason, decided to make a jump shot at this point. And his Cantor played defense for once in his life, which was
Who's
great.
Who's that?
Oh, my gosh. Ready, stop.
I'm done.
I hope so.
And all of a sudden, the lead was cut to 4 within the blink of an eye. And I was like, oh, my God, there's no way we lose. And when I tell you how nervous I was going into the last 30 seconds. We had the ball inbounded on the sideline. We were down by 2, and I wasn't really sure kind of what we were going to do. I think there was about 40 seconds left, and we had to go 2-for-1. Dame hit a crazy layup, first of all, to tie the game. CJ had a clutch bucket before that. He did his signature Hezzy mid-range jumper, which is almost automatic. And when Russell Westbrook decided to keep the ball away from Paul George, who had 41, I think, at that point, and was shooting 80% from the field,
and decided to go ratchet and clank.
We're just gonna have to live with this, I guess. I want him to shoot the ball, because Russ can't shoot. If you're new here, Russ can't shoot.
You don't even have to be new, bro.
And I saw it clank off, and he got the rebound, and I was really hoping we didn't call a timeout. We didn't. And I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, I had my phone out. I was recording. I knew something was going to happen. And Damian Lillard decides the energy in the building changed. And Dame decided to pull the most ridiculous game winner I've ever watched. Who has the audacity to pull up from 37 feet, step back on one of the most prominent perimeter defenders in basketball? literally only Dame.
Yes, and, sir.
And it was astonishing. It went from us cheering loud, the shot goes up in the air, the arena is dead quiet, except for one dude who is whistling. Which you can hear from like the front row.
Oh, dude, Whistling P, bro. Whistling P was
shout
there.
Shout out to my guy who was whistling. You can hear it on every camera angle, wherever you're at. Hopefully you're listening to this podcast. And it went from loud to dead silent to the most loud eruption that I have ever heard in my life. And it was, I've never hugged so many random people. I've never been so emotional, like happiness-wise. Cried many tears. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever witnessed in person. Amazing. And I mean, yeah, it just was absolutely incredible. Point here for just a moment. Let's go ahead and from our sponsor. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. Brady, I want to ask you this personally real quick because I didn't get the chance to talk about this at first, but I just want you to walk me through something. I think Damian Lillard might have had the coldest celebration after the shot.
Oh my gosh, dude. It was so disrespectful, but it was like it was like the perfect amount of disrespect.
Yes.
Dude, it was – I mean, and Damian Lillard said it perfectly in his post-game interview. He's like, I didn't really have anything to say to them. I just – it was time for them to go home. Like, after everything that happened, all the trash talk that Russell Westbrook and the Thunder had been, you know, going off on, for him to just hit that shot, not say a word, walk away and turn and look at them and wave goodbye, like, it was so perfect. And I just, again, I remember where I was. That is honestly so funny to me. I was watching that game in my apartment. I was newly married, and me and my wife just got back from somewhere, and her feelings were hurt about something that happened, and my wife was crying, and I was watching the game, and I was like, I remember Russ missed the shot, and I'm like looking at my wife and she's crying, and I'm looking at the TV like, oh my God. And I'm like, I like look at my wife and I look at the game and Dame is dribbling, and I literally walked over, I hugged her, I said, babe, I love you so much, but you do not understand what is about to happen right now. I said, I literally said I will tend to you in a minute. And then I was watching the game and she's sitting on the bed crying, like, I'll admit there's a bad husband. But Dame hits that shot and I lose my mind. And I'm like screaming, and I run over and I said, I'm so sorry, but do you even understand what just happened right now? Like, do you even? And she's like, I don't even care. And I was like, you will care. Do not say that.
Yeah, how dare
I celebrated, took care of business on the other end, but I was like torn in that moment. I was like, do I take care of this business or do I watch Damian Lillard do his business? That was a great moment, man. That celebration was so cold. Love, like, absolutely love that moment.
Truly, I think just truly a Coleman personality on the court and off the court.
For sure.
Just cold-blooded, handled, take care of business, let his game do the talking. I want to go into the second H of the Triple H segment. Heartwarming moments. And there's obviously a lot that we've been able to witness over our time watching basketball. Brady, I'm going to pass it to you first. What's one of those moments that was just heartwarming for you to watch? What was a moment that really just kind of moved you and touched your heart?
There's players in the NBA that you just want to root for. You know what I mean? They're not only great players, but they're just like great human beings, or they've been through a lot, and like players you just want to see succeed. You know, players like Giannis and players like Tim Duncan. Like, I don't know how you could hate Tim Duncan. Like, you know, players like.
I mean, you can fall asleep while watching him.
Yeah, honestly, how could you hate him? He gave me some of the best naps I've ever had. Like,
yeah, for sure.
You know, players like that, just like who are not only like animals on the court, but like just wonderful personalities off the court. You know, they give you their great sound bites. Like, honestly, like Marshawn Lynch, I know it's football, but like, how can you hate Marshawn Lynch? Like, the dude's just he's just so cool.
Yeah.
You just want him to succeed.
Yeah.
So one of the moments that just like really touched me was, we've talked about it before, but like when Derrick Rose had his 50-point game.
Yeah.
That moment was so cool to watch as a fan, just to see everything that he's been through culminate and, you know, have that 50-point outburst, and to not only just like do that, but then have that post game press conference and like he's crying and like you can't help but just like, you know, feel what he's feeling, like all that hard work that he had. It was like, it was such a good moment, and it was such a good feel good story for the league. And it's just so nice to see like players like that succeed. And that's one moment that I'll never forget, is just truly watching Derrick Rose have that moment. And as much as it was cool to see, like watch that moment and watch him take over that game, it was even cooler to just see him have that success and him have that moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. After everything that he's been through, like, you know, going from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, like in an instant, and being able to kind of climb his way back to the mountaintop. Mm-hmm. Even if it really was just for, you know, one performance like that, or one night like that. Like, I mean, he didn't just have 50. Like, he had, I mean, homie had like 6 assists. He had 5 rebounds.
I think, yeah, he was 2 playing.
Blocks or something. Like, he was
balling. Yeah, he had the game-saving block too.
He was impacting every aspect of the game, and now he wasn't just putting up buckets. And I think that's so, so awesome. Just like, as he was like getting healthy again, he was like becoming more versatile and like changing his style of play. And
totally.
He finally got to the point to where the adaptation, like it like became worth it, and it worked. And now he's a great player on an NBA team. Like he's a great role player and helps a lot. Thomas, what about you, man?
Well, one thing that I just love, honestly, and I guess this could be cheesy or whatever, but I just love the fact that, you know, basketball is human. Like, yes, it's sports. But like, one thing that I've always told people that, like, why I love sports is like because they just create some of the most beautiful stories, and there's crazy things that happen that like it wouldn't happen anywhere else. And I think I just love the humanity aspect of sports. And there's just a lot of these like heartwarming moments are just like little moments that represent in a big way where, like, honestly, one of my favorite heartwarming moments was when Craig Sager came back to the broadcast after his cancer treatment and interviewed Greg Popovich. Mm-hmm. And Greg Popovich, if you don't know, like, he's always cold to every – it's dope. He's always so freaking ice cold to every, like, reporter he talks to. He doesn't care. But there was like this like warmth and this like humanity and this playfulness in Popovich that you don't see. And he was so sweet to Craig Sager. Like, it was just, honestly, it was just like, wow, there's so much respect and love happening right now. That is, it was just such a sweet, cool little moment that meant so much to watch. And, you know, because Craig Sager was a legend, rest in peace. And it was just, it was so, so cool to see that. But honestly, this is ridiculous. But one of my favorite heartwarming moments comes from Natalie Gilbert. Do you remember who Natalie Gilbert is, Owen?
No. Why are you just asking me?
She is the young woman.
Because you're the stat man.
She's the young woman who tried to sing the national anthem in the 2003 NBA playoffs.
She
forgot the words. And Natalie Gilbert, I was actually did some research. She won a contest. Toyota put a contest on, and they called it "Get the Feeling of a Star."
Shout out to Toyota Thon.
Yeah, so she wins this contest to sing the national anthem at a playoff game in 2003. And she gets up there and honestly, pretty good voice. She's going, and then she forgets the words. And she's standing there in front of thousands. And it's like everyone's biggest fear. Like they don't. And then all of a sudden, the Blazers head coach, Maurice Cheeks, walks up next to her and helps her finish the national anthem.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's so sweet. Like, it's such a sweet, like, tender moment that he was like, you know what? I'm going to, like, this chick is struggling. I'm going to help. But honestly, that was the only thing he was able to finish strong because we ended up losing by 12 that night. So,
shout out to Mo Cheeks.
I'm glad that he was able to help someone finish because he did not help the team win that game. We lost by 12. Anyway,
that's double digits.
Correct. That's okay, two more than 10.
I see you, Mr. Statman. Let's go, dude.
Yeah, you're taking everyone's job. You're just telling everyone.
And Mr. Analytic. Let's go, bro.
But, yeah, I would probably say those as far
I
as.
I am 0.9.
But I would say that those are probably the moments that I think of. But I also want to say this one as well is whatever you believe about him, whatever you think about him, it doesn't matter. The "You the Real MVP" speech still gives me chills.
Yep. Yep. And I 100% agree with you.
Like, I even re-listened to it today in preparation and I teared up. I like started to cry because if anyone's ever been in those moments, in those situations where you've grown up and you just have one person that's always cheering you on and making sure you get there, like you everyone can relate to that. And I just his love for his mom was so heartwarming and it was such a big deal.
100% agree with
an
you.
An honorable mention for me would be a couple seasons ago when Russell Westbrook hit that game.
To Nipsey
Hussle, like that was that was such a cool moment. Like
that was crazy. Really that was like, crazy.
Wow, you know, it all fell together perfectly.
Yeah, I'd say for me, one of the most heartwarming moments I've ever seen, was Giannis's MVP speech. I actually watched his speech yesterday, and just kind of hearing. If you know anything about Giannis, or if you don't, I'll go ahead and just kind of relay a little bit. I mean, this guy, you know, came into the NBA at 18 years old. He's from Greece. Such a humble dude. I mean, he would give all of his game checks. He would send them back to his family in Greece. And there was one night where he had already sent all of his money and he couldn't afford a cab. And so he decided to walk to the game. And this is a really cool story. There's a family who was driving and they noticed and recognized who he was and offered him a ride to the game. And it's just, number one, shout out to those people wherever they're at.
Yeah.
You guys are studs. Number two, just the fact that like, just the humbleness that he has. He's such a giving person. He's such a great role model off the court. Such a genuine person. And an incredible basketball player. And watching him win the MVP, having that incredible season that he did shortly after his father died, it was just one of the most moving speeches. Talking about where he came from his hometown, talking about his brothers and how much they pushed him, how much his mom pushed him, and just, I mean, kind of like what Thomas said. I mean, you had that one person or that collective group, maybe that very small circle that believes in you, that you would not be where you're at without. And it's so cool to see, you know, where everything is at with that. And let's go ahead and I'm just going to move on to the last one, the heavy moments. There's a bunch of heavy moments, I think, especially over the past 5 or 6 years that we could talk about. I got a couple just off the top of the dome. John Wall had an interview one year. I believe it was in like 20, I think it was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. He had probably one of the most kind and genuine connections with a fan. She was an 8-year-old girl. Her name was Maya. And she was currently at that point fighting cancer. And he got really close with the family. And she unfortunately ended up losing the battle after fighting so hard. And I've never seen a player cry during an after game interview before. And at this point I was like, I was 13 and didn't really understand and comprehend emotion at that point. And even that, like watching him talk about her and the family, saying, you know, I'm going to give my shoes, the jerseys, everything, all the proceeds for the rest of my season, everything tonight is dedicated to her and her family. And it really just shows like the impact that he had or that she had on him in such a short time. And there's so many different moments. Isaiah Thomas, you know, losing his sister and going off in that entire playoffs until he got hurt, by
so
the way.
So wild. Yeah.
Going off. You know, I think they played the Bulls first round and he came out. I think he dropped almost 40, and then they played the Wizards the next round. And then he that was one of the games where he dropped 51. Like, homie just unlocked, he unlocked a new level, bro. It was crazy. But I really want to, and I want to spend a decent amount of time talking about this one, because I think we can all mutually agree that this is probably the hardest moment that we've had to witness as basketball fans. And I'd probably say that most of this generation's fans have gotten to see. And that was Kobe Bryant's passing. Thomas, why don't you go ahead and talk to me real quick, just a little bit about what did that day look like for you? Like, where were you when you found out the news? I'm sure you can remember, like, I think you can speak for all of us and say how shocked you were, and the whole world froze.
Yeah, so those of you who don't know, I actually live in Orange County, and about probably 20 minutes away from where Kobe lives. He lives in Newport Beach, and so the community was obviously like shocked about it. But I vividly remember it solely because actually that was the day of my bachelor party. I was getting ready to get married, and this was literally just like 2 weeks before I was getting married. And I was at church and serving at church, and I was actually serving with the junior high kids. And I got a text from a friend, and it was that TMZ link that everybody got, and everyone was just kind of like, you know, you can't really always trust TMZ. So everyone's like, wait, what the heck? This is crazy. And so I just remember reading that and seeing that and just being almost numb to it. Like, no, like there's no way. Cause we've all lived through it with the Google age, where like people have just randomly said like Will Smith died because of shark ate
I swear Will Smith dies every year.
You can literally make a hoax out of anything.
Exactly. Crazy. And so and I think more or less we wanted it to be we wanted that to not be the case. And so I remember honestly weeping when I found out. And there's a couple other kids that were like really shocked by it as well. And then obviously when the news came out of who else was in the helicopter and stuff, my heart broke even more. And I also have another kind of connection as far as like members of my family actually helped create Kobe's documentary Muse. So some of my family, my family-in-law, so to speak, they were also very close with the Bryant family. And so seeing all of that kind of culminated to one, it was really, really tough. And so then I was like, okay, we're doing a bachelor party, that's cool, like let me try to like, you know, have fun and we end up going to Dave and Buster's, which is probably the worst place to go because there's TVs everywhere.
And they got that little Laker hoop that you can, like, shoot buckets on.
So we go, and literally it is just everywhere that Kobe's passed. And it was and what was really interesting is, like, that day, because I can obviously speak to the day, was it was oddly cold. And it was oddly really, really foggy. And there was this weird, like, just ominous to that day. And so, like, to have that happen, it was truly, like, it was the biggest loss that the NBA has ever seen.
Yeah.
Not even just the NBA, but the world in at large, because Kobe meant so much to so many people.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Brady, what about you? Walk me through a little bit, just about how, like, what was that day like for you?
So I was also at church. It was right in between services, and me and my wife were getting ready to go home. And one of this random guy, I can't remember who it was, he walked up to the group of friends that I was in and kind of like talking, and he goes, "Yo, Kobe Bryant just died." And I was like, "Shut up. Like, you can't just randomly say that." Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't do that.
I would have been like, if it was Will Smith, I would have believed you, but, like, yeah. You know what I mean? But I literally looked at him and I was like, "Bro, shut up. Like, don't say that." And he's like, "No, Kobe just died." And he, like, turned his phone to us, and it was the report. And I was just like, "No, like, that's so fake." So I got on my phone, and I, you know, you type in K on Google, and it's like, "Kobe Bryant died," you know, "Kobe Bryant's death" or "helicopter crash."
Yeah.
And and I'm like, "Oh my God, like, please tell me this isn't real," you know? And I look, and I'm just like, and there's like multiple reports with a bunch of like, and like every story I'm reading is a lot of different information. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, I just tell my wife, I'm like, "Okay, like, we do have to go. Like, we have to go. Like, I don't want to cry in front of people." Like, yeah, I'm a fairly emotional person. And, you know, I personally have dealt with like loss in my family. So, I would say at times, like, I have been like numb to it, but like, this is like a hero of mine. You know what I mean? Or like, I got to stop saying like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's getting bad. Anyway, like, so what happened was, I'm just kidding. I just cried on the way home, and, you know, with the next couple hours of more information coming out, when I found out that Gianna was also in the helicopter, that's what really hit me. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what really tore me up is, and, you know, the next couple days of more information coming out, that's truly what I think really got me, was that, like, we were watching, you know, grown men cry on TV.
Yeah,
Jay Williams, to see Shaq cry, to see more, you know, former teammates cry, like, I cried too. And my wife was like, I'm pretty sure she was like really confused. She's like, "I know it's really sad, but like, I was crying for days, you know, I really was, it really, really impacted me." And even now that I'm a father, you know, I wasn't at the time. And Thomas, you're also a dad, I'm sure you can see this, like, to just like think about his family, and like, they not only did they lose a husband, but a father, but they lost a daughter. You know, I can't even imagine losing my child. Like, it really tore me up.
Yeah.
And the funeral, just like, it's something I still like sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, Kobe's gone. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Kobe's really gone. So
real quick, I want to, as much as we talk about Kobe, I also want to just give love to the other families that were involved. There was a total of, I believe, 8 people. I think the Altobelli family, Christina Mauser, Sarah and Peyton Chester, and then the pilot Ara Zabayan. Just give a shout out to their families as well. And you know, that just the fact that there were so many people involved, friends, family, and like just people who Kobe trusted, like also fell with him too. And it just like absolutely wrecked me and my entire month, honestly. I've never watched so many Kobe highlights after that.
Totally.
I think it's pretty safe to say like Kobe's probably had the most impact outside of basketball, maybe besides LeBron, that our generation has gotten to experience, especially with what he was able to do in film, winning an Oscar. Just his mind and how he impacted the game afterwards, what he was doing for women's basketball. Like he was totally. So not even close to being done with impacting the game of basketball. He was just getting started.
Yeah.
And I think Kobe is really somebody that we can look at as a positive impact on our communities, and on people who want a good as well as personality. I think he had a really good balance of being kind and considerate, caring. He was an incredible role model as a dad, and just also just would it's so much bigger than the game of basketball. It's so much bigger than just the Lakers. Like his legacy is so timeless, that's what it will be forever. And it honestly just really inspires me. I don't know about you guys. It inspires me just to, at least for this podcast as well, just to be a positive impact on our communities. Like this is a safe place for people to go. This is a place where we want, you know, to impact people in a positive way. And it's guys like Kobe who have made it possible for platforms like this to be like advertised. And so I'm super grateful for Kobe Bryant, and we will miss him absolutely dearly. That's all I have. That's it,
dude.
That's all we got for today, bro.
So good. Yo, can I throw two heavy moments in there real quick?
Yeah. Of course.
One, we cannot forget the game when Michael Jordan played on Father's Day.
Can't. Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, like we didn't, any of us watch that live, but
no.
When you rewatch those things, watch The Last Dance, things like that, that was like the heaviest to just see him cry and see him, you know, like all of that stuff is nuts. But and also,
his body go limp.
Yes. And another one that was so heavy that I rewatched even today was when Klay went down.
Oh my gosh, dude.
And
that
when
sucked.
When Klay went down, but the heavy moment was when Steph Curry slammed the ball on the ground and then sat down on the other side of the court and just watched as everyone was just like just stunned.
Yep.
And that was just so heavy because truthfully, like you don't see, like you just saw the love that he had for his friend. It wasn't like, oh frick, we're gonna lose this game, or oh, like it was like, I am so sad my friend is in pain, and he didn't know how to like handle that. And that is just such a crazy heavy moment. And then also for the old heads that are listening as well, another huge heavy moment was when Magic Johnson held the press conference when he came, when he announced that he had the AIDS virus or HIV, and like, no one knew what to do. No one knew, like, that at that point that was a death sentence.
Yeah.
And so everyone just thought he was announcing that he was going to die soon. And so I, like, yet again, we weren't alive for that, but you got to give credit where credit is due. And that was just such a heavy moment for the NBA community.
Absolutely. You just reminded me of one too. I'll just mention this one too real quick, is when Gordon Hayward snapped his leg in his first game as a Boston Celtic.
Yeah.
That was really heavy. That was just can you believe that? Like,
no, that was absolutely heavy, bro. Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm not really a Celtics fan, so.
No, but coming off of the best season of his career, free agent move to Boston. That's a super team with him and Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum obviously getting his start, Kyrie Irving moved over there.
That didn't have a lasting impact. He's still hooping.
It changed his career. He ain't hooping like he was before.
I think we can just all agree that anytime someone goes down, it's heavy.
Anytime a leg is broken, it's
anybody who gets hurt and has to come, you know, like go through it all like that. That just sucks to watch.
That is true. I'll agree.
Yeah, it's absolutely heavy. Ha ha.
Thank you.
See what I did there? You're welcome.
Yeah, end the episode. That was awful.
That's going to do it for today's episode, guys. Thank you so much for the support. Thank you so much for listening. Please go ahead and follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as Anchor. We really appreciate the support.
And Instagram.
Instagram at Point Nine Podcast and Facebook. You can find us there as well. We appreciate you guys. Love you so much. And may the spirit of 77 be with you always. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Point Nine Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to stay up to date on all episodes. And if you like the show, please share it with your friends. It's our desire to create a community for fans of the league to interact, discuss, and share. So help us keep the conversations going on Instagram and Facebook at Point Nine Podcast. Until next time.